Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for $1, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for $1 wherever you get your podcasts. Great Lake Swimmers is a band, but it's also really a man named Tony Decker, who currently resides in the Niagara region of Ontario. Decker began playing as Great Lake Swimmers 15 years ago and has seen a loosely outfitted art project with revolving members become one of Canada's most respected and cherished enigmatic folk and rock outfits. Their impressively distinctive 7 albums include 2018's The Waves, The Wake, which is out now via Network Records, and found Decker opting not to compose any songs on acoustic guitar, instead employing a range of unique instrumentation and vocal ideas to ostensibly reimagine what Great Lake Swimmers might sound like. A day after getting back from an extensive American tour, Tony drove to Guelph's CFRU studios to meet me for a talk about The Waves, The Wake, being a Canadian in America during its 2018 midterm elections, parenthood and artistic timelines, what's next for Great Lake Swimmers, and much more. With the support of listeners like you, who subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from CFRU 93.3 FM, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, this is the 443rd episode of Creative Control, featuring the gifted musical visionary Tony Decker of Great Lake Swimmers, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Tony. How's it going?
Good, good. How are you?
Pretty well. Welcome to Guelph and CFRU.
Very nice to be here.
Have you been here before?
I don't think I've been here before. Or at least it's been a very long time if I have been here before at CFRU.
Yeah, like I mean specifically at CFRU.
Yeah,
you're a
been
frequent.
Been to Guelph many, many times.
Many times. But. And I just couldn't recall if you might have done something here before. You've done lots of radio stuff.
Yeah.
Big, small levels.
All over the map.
All over the map.
Yeah.
Speaking of all over the map, thank you for coming in. You just got back from tour, right?
Yeah, we just got back from 6 weeks in the States. We did
6 weeks.
Yeah.
I used to say this all the time to you. You are a road hog. You like the tour. You tour hard when you tour.
Well, it's part of the whole deal. We have a good little crew going on the road it's an important part of the equation. It's a good way to keep the conversation going.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation starts when you release a record. And it continues when you sort of share it with people out there.
That's true.
We had a good run. It's been a good run.
Beyond interviews like this one, when you say you're engaging in a conversation with people, do you often engage with fans about maybe the meaning behind your work? Or do they ask you questions like that the way maybe a journalist might? Like, do you end up in those kinds of conversations with anyone?
Occasionally.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Because often the exchange is, great show, thank you for coming. You know, those are the kinds of the things, but do people are like, while I have you here, can I ask you about this song or this album? Does that come up?
It does, yeah, it does, yeah. And one of the things that I really like about that is that, to me, the highest compliment or the highest sort of, the best sort of exchange, I think, to me is when someone connects with you or with the music, or they come to the show and they say, this song was very important to me for this reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it could be any number of things, but it's like, it's important to like the fabric of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the beauty of it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like an ego thing or anything like that at all. It's just that, like, that's a good reason for making music, is for it to be part of the fabric of someone's life.
Yeah. You know? No, that's a fair point to make. Yeah. I mean, you say 6 weeks in the States. You drove back from Indianapolis, did you say? Just like last
Yesterday,
night?
Yesterday, yeah.
So as we're speaking, it's just past the midterm election in America. You were there throughout the height of it, I guess. You were, right? You were
most definitely.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What was that like? Because I've toured I toured once in the States during a presidential election, during the Al Gore, George W. Bush election in 2000. And I noticed like a palpable, profound sort of difference in the atmosphere from state to state, city to city. Did you notice that? Did you talk to people about what was going on?
A little bit, yeah. But I mean, people are very on edge and people are very alarmed. And, you know, in general, especially the people that we came into contact with.
Sure.
Going through the middle of America too. It's like it seems like a different place than other parts of the country. It's a big country, so there's a lot of different people and a lot of different viewpoints. There's a lot of really good and forward thinking I'm trying to be diplomatic about this, but there's a lot of opposing viewpoints.
Sure.
My suspicion is that potentially America is not as divided as we think it is. I think it's divided amongst the people that bothered voting, you know,
which is saying.
I mean, I think it's generous to say that half of the country voted.
I think it was a record, from what I understand, it was like over 100 million people voted in that midterm.
I guess I'm talking about like not the midterms.
Oh,
but like,
sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Other
elections.
But I think there was a very good turnout for this one. So.
Do you have, because I have a thing, I know a little bit about history, I read about history, and when I'm in certain states in America, I get a little, I'm a little more, I don't know, not paranoid, just like, I'm a little like, oh, I'm in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
The history of this state is weird. Did you or your crew have that, like, oh man, we're going to this red state or this blue state or whatever. Like, do you think about that when you're traveling in the States?
Because
it's this mythical place in some ways with so much history.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that where, like, our sort of, like, place in that is potentially in these little oases, you know, where we're around creative people, we're around people in the arts, or you know what I mean, people that sort of know what to expect from our show, and
bubble to bubble to bubble,
yeah,
in a weird way,
yeah, in a weird way. So I think it's definitely on our minds, and especially coming into like while we were out, like the shooting happened in Pittsburgh,
oh yeah,
which was. I mean, it's just devastating to hear stuff like that. And like, that's the stuff that we were really absorbing, was kind of like, that's all happening as we're there.
Yeah.
We were literally just in California, and had we been a couple of weeks later, we wouldn't have been able to drive to our show because of the wildfires and because of, it's basically on fire right now. And you know, and the larger issue there is climate change, and we're right at the tipping point, and there's just, you know, the time for action is now, and like that's kind of more on the forefront of my mind as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to congratulate you. This might be a nice segue into this new record, the Waves, The Wake, because I feel like some of these concerns, I suppose, that you've expressed are here. I feel like throughout there's the sense that something is changing or needs to change. I think very obvious references to such things, like this song, Visions of a Different World, in Unmaking the Bed, which I believe the title of the album comes from.
Mm-hmm.
There's this sense of, you know, rising, falling, like it's just things kind of moving, but where are they moving? And that uncertainty. Have I captured that on some level? Is that maybe where you were coming from, that uncertainty?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I liked the words The Waves and The Wake together, because the waves kind of represented kind of like a push towards the future, and The Wake was meant to be like the, you know, the trail behind a boat in the water, like the past, like the trail behind you, and kind of trying to find the middle, like trying to find the center in that, and trying to find the balance in that, and sort of, yeah, navigating that sort of sense of what's to come and what's behind, I guess.
Yeah, and I couldn't help but think of The Wake as, I know what you're referring to here, and there's a lot of water imagery, I feel like, on this record, but The Wake in this time of being woke, it kind of spoke to me too.
Absolutely.
Like, and awareness.
That's the other meaning, and that's why I like those words together, because they're very, like, they're charged words, you know? Like, they're very kind of like, they're powerful words together, And yeah, absolutely. And waves too. I mean, it can work on a few different levels too.
Yeah.
That I started thinking about, you know, when I was thinking about a title for the album. So.
Yeah. So you had these lyrics already made. Like this, like I say, this, the title is pulled from the song, essentially. Mm-hmm. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, I started noticing like all the waves in different songs too. And like, there was like all these other things, like there, it's really like this contained group of songs, you know, that's like a little bit kind of like references each other. And then I started noticing repeating words coming up, and so it kind of made sense on that level, I guess.
They written in a batch per se?
They were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I often think of this, and some writers have done a more, I often think of Gord Downie, because Gord Downie would do this on every Tragically Hip record, I think. I really think it's every single one, which I hadn't noticed until the end of the band, where every album seems to have a song that echoes another song, a phrase, a lyric, an idea. And I know that I feel like he was writing in a batch, mm-hmm. and then the things were swimming around in there, and some of them made sense in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying is that unusual for you to notice a repetition of idea, repetition of intent, maybe?
I guess so. I just feel like, I guess one way to describe it is that, like, musically, I was really trying to like reach a little further, I think, and like in the lyrics too, I was trying to dive a little deeper, you know, and it took me a lot longer, but
I see.
But I think it was, you know, it was rewarding to do that at the same time, I guess.
Dive a little deeper. You went ocean on me again.
Yeah.
There's a water thing going on, and I appreciate that.
It's a lake thing. That's okay.
Lake, ocean, yeah, whatever it is. So you say musically you were trying to transcend maybe something you've done before. Fans will notice that this is a record that isn't guitar-based, so to speak. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe some of the instrumentation is harp, lute, pipe organ, woodwinds. What else do you got going on there?
There's some marimbas happening
marimbas.
On some of the tracks. Yeah. Did you say pipe organ?
I did.
One from the there was that one that we recorded in the church, and
banjo, piano, some guitar.
Yeah, some guitar. I mean, I fought hard to not have any acoustic guitar on it, but
what was going on there? You felt like you needed to go aim a bit higher, so to speak, I guess. But which is interesting, because I feel like you've always had an ear for, you know, lush instrumentation and or sort of I know it's maybe a cliche. There's an orchestral movement to your folk music, if I may say. I hope that doesn't offend you.
No, not at all. No.
You've done interesting things with, I think, kind of conventional instrumentation, but this is, if my understanding is correct, you didn't even compose with an acoustic guitar for this, right?
No, some of them were, you know, on acoustic guitar, and then we, you know, worked out an arrangement based on the guitar part, and some of them were just on other instruments,
okay.
And some of them were, you know, like there's that one that's a cappella too, which I didn't think it really needed anything else. But I feel like we had like brought like as a group of people, like, I mean, first of all, like the sort of the band or the lineup on the albums is different on every album. It has been for all seven albums. But I feel like with this sort of group of people that we had brought our kind of sound to a certain point, and I wanted to do something different than sort of another folk rock record, which would have been fine too, I think. But, you know, I to me it was like, okay, we need to do something different, and I didn't just want to rely on like, okay, this is five people playing guitar, bass, and drums, you know, add something else, you know.
Do you have a sense of where that impulse to do something different for this record maybe stems from? I mean, I forgot to also say, congratulations, this is your 15th anniversary as Great Lakes Swimmers, right?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
So you've hit this milestone. I don't know how conscious you were of it when you were conceiving of this or whether the two crossed over, but I mean, I can objectively imagine that if you've been doing something in a similar way for that long, you might want to shake things up. I will say also, I think you've always shaken things up. Every record you seem to find a different environment, you know, where there's a maybe a connection to nature or natural reverb or what have you. You've used all sorts of venues and churches, silos, whatever. I can't go through the litany of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But you are very fascinated by new environments, new atmospheres for your work, which I think is telling. I mean, you've used rooms as instruments in themselves and approaches to songwriting. So this is not surprising to me that you would be like, I need to depart again. I need to try something different. But having said all that, back to my question, do you know or have a sense of what your impulse was to go this route in particular?
I don't know. I feel like I was just turning a corner in life. You know what I mean? Too. Like it's like, but also musically, I just felt like, I really feel like with this one, like, it's like, I'm excited for the next thing because I sort of already know what I want to do. And I think that there's so much room to go further and maybe, you know, further out there and really get into like, you know, quite different instrumentation. This whole like thing was like in the writing, in the music, it just sort of opened up a lot of avenues for me for, you know, just thinking and also in musical collaboration.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Was just something different about this one, I don't know if it's just where I am in my life, but it was like just this. It just feel like this light went on, and I'm, you know, it just sort of I feel like it took me a while to get to that place, but you know.
I guess I may be asking you something. I'm asking you to home in on something specific about a thing that seems to have happened maybe organically. I know that word comes up a lot, and on some level, I feel like it's appropriate. Sometimes I think it's a cop-out of, like when I use it, I'm like, am I just saying I don't know why something happened? It just happened. But that's sort of what you're saying. Like this was, it's not like you had this, you know, long-term desire to try something like this and you just finally had the opportunity. It just happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. Seemed to be the quickest way to me to do something different was just to put down the main instrument, not worry about like who's the backing band, so to speak. And it was like, I feel like the Toronto music community was kind of like the de facto sort of backing band on this record because I mean, even just like, for example, like this is just an example, but like, or two examples actually. One is like, you know, I want to do a song that is just marimba and vocals. And it's like, okay, like the co-producer, Chris Stringer, and I sat down and said, okay, who do we know? Or who can we find like in Toronto that's a marimba player? And I don't know if you've like seen a marimba in action, but it's like a big instrument.
It
takes up
massive.
A whole room.
Yeah.
So this guy, Michael Davidson, came in and set up the marimba, and we just sort of, I had some ideas. He was kind of riffing on some stuff, and it was like, you know, it was a really awesome part of the process to just kind of do that, you know? Just to see to be in the room and to just be like working in a different way where it's not like you're trying to work out a guitar part or a solo. It's like you're just like, he's got this full marimba and he's like running back and forth, you know, in the room, kind of working out parts, and we're layering up stuff. And then he gets out his bow and he's starting to bow the keys, and it's like takes on this whole other life form. And it was like, it got me really excited again about, you know, about the process of the music, I guess.
You mentioned you have a crew that's been relatively tight for some time. Different members have come and gone. Mm-hmm. Michael was a stranger?
Yeah.
What's that like? You bring a stranger into your recording session, which, you know, I mean, I think recording sessions have their own vibe.
Yeah.
And depending on the circumstance, there can be pressure, time pressure, tension to trust a stranger to come in and set up this massive thing. Where does that impulse come from? Is that a social thing for you almost, like to bring someone in who's a specialist and maybe get to know them and figure that out?
I wouldn't really say it was a social thing. It was just a really great musical thing.
I see.
It was awesome. It was great. I wish there was more. I wish we could have done it more. We just had one day. We had a day.
You've employed instrumentation that is usually external to Great Lakes Swimmers. I assume a lot of these people were strangers, maybe.
Some were people that we have worked with before. Like the other example I was going to use is Drew Dreca, who did the woodwind arrangement on the first track on The Talking Wind. And it was like, this is a song about the wind, and I want to do an arrangement that is just woodwinds and vocals, you know, and like, so it's like there was a lot of moments where I wanted like the instrumentation to really reinforce what was happening in the song, and like that one most dramatically, I think. And so he, you know, we worked on it together a little bit, but he put together this amazing arrangement and got some players that he works with as a regular session player and as a, you know, as just a musical sort of genius, you know, in Toronto.
Right.
And kind of put this together. And I was really, I mean, I really can't express how happy I was with how it turned out. Like, it was exactly what I was hoping for.
That's awesome. No, yeah. That's great. I guess I ask because I think if people have only heard your records, they might think of you as an introspective person, maybe a shy person. I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. the delivery, the attack is, it has a gentleness to it. Even when you are digging into some of the heavy subject matter on a record like this. So, I ask, I know you, and I know that, you know, you like to laugh and have fun and all those things. I'm not saying you're some morose, brooding artist or nothing, but, I mean, I ask about the social aspect because I imagine also as a hard touring artist, I mean, I feel like you really want to connect with people as a musician, as an artist.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good one. That's a good kind of point, you know?
Is the first part correct? Are you kind of shy? Are you a bit introspective?
I feel very introverted by nature.
Introverted, I should say. Yeah.
Introspective, I guess too. But I don't think that my scope is maybe is not just that.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's just that. But yeah. I think it's an aspect of you that I've long observed and admired. I mean, from the moment you and I met in Guelph, we were talking like everything was fine. You were very engaged and engaging, and I didn't think of you that way, but I do think for someone who hasn't heard you in an interview context or had a conversation with you, just listening to the record, you might be like, whoa, this guy seems heavy and dark, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I bet some people are like, I don't know if I'd want to talk to Tony because he's got stuff going on there.
Yeah,
like,
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, I know there's a huge, massive social aspect to you. You have a community of people you rely on.
When was the last time we actually talked, Vish? Was it like?
I think it was at your house. I mean, for an interview?
Yeah.
It was at your house in Toronto at the time.
Yeah.
I think off of, somewhere like in Parkside or something. I can't remember where we were. And it was a few years ago. I don't know. It must maybe the last record or second last record or something.
Could be.
Yeah, it was a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you ask?
I just mean like, I feel like probably since the last time I've talked to you, there's been a lot of changes in my life too, like having kids
yes.
and kind of like all of that stuff too. And there was just like, I think that like I've just undergone like a very big kind of change in perspective since then, you know.
Since having children of your own.
Yeah. And I think that obviously that's a big change for everybody. And it's not something I really want to get into, but it was part of like a bigger change for me.
You don't want to get into it, but you bring it up. That's fascinating.
No. I mean, I just don't want to be like, this is a song I wrote about my kids or something like that. But it's not like that at all. But it's because it's not. But I mean, I just mean that like it's informed my perspective. It changes the way you see things. It changes the way you see the world.
I hear a guy who has kids on your record.
Yeah.
I hear it all over the place. I hear you watching people sleep. I hear you. I mean, you or the narrative voice. I hear things here where... in a certain light, even this song, in certain, like there's something about my hands, they belong to you or whatever it is. And I viewed that as I've changed as well, hopefully for the better for the most part. And I'm hearing and seeing things differently as well. So maybe 10 years ago, I wouldn't think twice about a lyric like that, the familial line. And if I'm wrong about that one or whatever, that's my interpretation. If you think, no, that's not where I was going from, feel free to call me on it. But I see things maybe that aren't there or weren't the intent, and it's because I'm a parent. And you're saying you had that changed you. You don't really want to get into it, but I am curious in terms of, if you don't mind, does it change your artistic motivations? Does it change your artistic perspective?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that like, you know, I like being at home now. Like that's more of like,
sure.
that's not like, you know what I mean? I think early on, especially when the band started out, it's kind of like, it was a bit more of an adventure, you know, to be out on the road and to kind of like be experiencing new places and kind of like, you know, meeting all kinds of people all the time. And it was great. But now I think that, you know, I'm sort of like, you know, it's become a lot more difficult to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
to want to do it
and to just, it becomes harder to leave, you know? And so I guess just in that way, you know, I just feel like I'm kind of like, I feel my zone that I want to be in now is more of like a family zone, you know?
6 weeks of consistent touring is, I could not do that anymore. Not that anyone's asking me to, but like this notion of being away for that long, like I'm turning down trips left and right now, whereas even a few years ago, before my daughter, when we last spoke, I surely would have had my son already. And then subsequent to that, I believe my daughter is going to be 4 soon. So I think we spoke around that, maybe when she was about to be born or something. Anyway, I don't want to leave my wife alone with these monsters for one thing. And the other side of it is, I want to be around. And I've made, I think, certain decisions in my life to ensure that I can be home, to be with them and to pick them up after school. And that's a change for me. And I assume you're, but 6 weeks. So you're away for 6 weeks. What's that like as a dad, as a partner? How was that for you?
Well, it's easier than it was when, you know, like even like 10 years ago when I didn't even have a cell phone or a computer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was like, and there was, you know, there was just, it was like, it was literally like pay phones, you know, and that was the way.
Oh, yeah. You got the video audio interfaces now and things. Yeah.
It's a lot easier
to
kind of be in touch now.
How many kids do you have?
I have one and one on the way.
Oh,
actually.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah.
We have not talked in a while.
That's what I'm saying. That's like, and she's 4. She's already in school too. So it's kind of like,
wow.
Yeah. So it's, that's what I'm saying. It has been a while.
So, yeah. I mean, that's strange that you have a relationship with the world and that you don't want to see it as much anymore. That's fascinating.
Well, I think the focus for me is like, it's kind of like gone from being the, you know, outward to inward maybe. You know, and I just think that there's other.
Oh.
I think that there's more, almost maybe there's a spiritual aspect to like what I want to focus on next, and I think it's starting to reveal itself in this album, maybe more so than in the past even. But I think that it has been there in the past. But I just think there's just this sort of a different sort of consciousness to me that has kind of like come about, and I'm still trying to identify what that is.
You don't know.
I don't really know. I'm trying to figure it out though.
I tried to do a very rudimentary reading of some themes on the record. I do have a sense that the future is on your mind.
Yeah.
What it's going to look like, what it's going to be, which sometimes when you have kids and you're in the midst of it, you don't, I can't even think about a week ahead because everything just seems in the moment. But then you get a news flash or something on your, do you have a smartphone now?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so I get a thing on my phone from the BBC News or the New York Times saying, calamity, like scientists, it's not good.
Yeah.
The news for the next few decades, nah. And then you're like, oh, uh-huh. And but then I, for a moment anyway, I'm just like, ah, well, that's not good. But then I think about my kids. I'm like, oh, that's actually really bad.
Yeah.
And so it's on my mind more, and that's not good for anxiety levels or anything else. But I feel like some of that, and I don't mean to go back to the water imagery or allude to your band name, but there's stuff like that is swimming around on this record, right? Mm-hmm. Contemplating what kind of world we might be leaving behind for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's there?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's that whole kind of like past-future thing too, maybe on a larger level, for sure.
Do you think about your parents a lot more than now that you have kids?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think I do. I can certainly appreciate, you know, the sort of the struggle, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like I can definitely like my, like they had, I'm one of four.
You have, oh my, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow. So I'm like the oldest of four. Grew up in a very small town in a farm, never thought that the arts would ever be like a kind of like an, even an option for me. You know what
okay.
I mean? Like I grew up in a very rural place and yeah.
So you appreciate them more, but are you, I'm having a thing where I'm starting to realize the time is moving and I'm in the middle of it a little bit more. I'm mm-hmm. starting to realize that, you know, my kids are growing older, my parents are growing older, my sister's getting older, everyone's getting older, and it's more on my mind than mm-hmm. I would like it to be. I used to just skate through life, living life, doing my stuff,
yeah.
and now your body starts to remind you of, actually, you should probably take a second to pay attention to that thing, and you're like, oh, crap. And I'm 40 and that's what's going to happen now. Yeah. I got to think about that stuff every once in a while. Still trying to do the skating through life thing.
Yeah.
But are you encountering that a little bit?
Like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that like for you? I mean, as a guy who's on the road, is it more tiring? Are you more used to it? You probably got a nice, hopefully nice accommodations by this point, but does it get to you this beyond being wanting to be home?
It's harder too. It's harder
it's
for
harder,
sure.
Yeah.
And the big, the kind of the other thing is that like seven records in, we don't have the opportunity to be like the new young band kind of either. So it's like, it's kind of like works on a lot of different levels, but I don't know. We do our best to kind of like self-care is really important on the road and doing all that stuff and stretching and make sure you're breathing and eating.
There's a weird thing where sometimes on the road you actually live healthier because you're more conscious of being on the road.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Finding the time to actually get to that self-care can be tricky. I mean, did you drive overnight from Indianapolis?
No, we took the day yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It was about 10 hours or something.
Still.
And then, it was a long drive. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just a grueling part of this situation. Now, I mean, you're 15 years into this band. And I think we've probably covered this in past interviews, but for those who are new, maybe to Great Lakes Swimmers, can we do some kind of at least a inception story, biographical overview? Like, do you remember where this came from? Because it felt to me like you had a vision for what you wanted to do right out of the gate. I mean, from your debut record on, you had your own voice, I thought, and you had this perspective on trying to make your recordings and songs as fascinating and as compelling as possible. And lots of people endeavor to do that. I don't know that everyone succeeds.
Hmm.
I remember last time we talked about punk rock a lot. We talked about Discord records and things like that. But then you didn't go that route, per se. So, anyway, I'm all over the place. But do you remember how 15 years ago, how this thing kind of came off the ground?
I think that it's funny that you mentioned that. And just to make a quick note of that, but it was the aesthetic that drove me. You know, from that music, from like hardcore music and from like music of that era. And it was not the aesthetic, I shouldn't say. It was like the
ideology, maybe?
Yeah, totally the ideology.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally it. And it was like, this music is for everybody. Pick up a guitar. You know what I mean? Do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you have, make sure you have something to say, you know, and don't be afraid of saying it. And, you know, and that sort of that, the ethic, I guess, you know, like the DIY ethic was really important to me, especially early on. And I think that carried through. And I think, you know, and I've, you know, I've probably said this before.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Too, but I think that, like, you know, that that folk music and sort of and hardcore music ethically aren't that far apart, you know, and it's really music for people.
They could sometimes occur in the exact same living room or basement, which I always found fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, and taking it right to the people, free of any infrastructure, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I see a connection as well.
And I that ethic is still a part of me too.
Yeah.
And we'll play anywhere from, and we still do play anywhere from, like, you know, people's living rooms and basements to Massey Hall.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, and to me, it's like, this, it's on the same level.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that about the ethic, but, yeah, I mean, we started recording the album in 2001 in this silo. It took 2 years to kind of figure out how to release it. It was released basically as an art project, all these like handmade CDs and
right
through like an art salon that was started by Phil Kligo and Jermaine Coe called WeWork, and they had monthly shows, art shows, and concerts at their apartment, and it sort of grew out of that. We released the first album that way. Outside eventually distributed, I think, initially.
Yeah,
sure. For the first couple albums. And then there was some interest from Network, you know, which was the irony of that being that, like, WeWork was a bit of a play on Network, which was one of the largest kind of indies in Canada for...
Was it really?
At the time,
I didn't know that there was an actual, literally, a play on Network. That's funny.
I was just talking to someone that thought WeWork was part of Network.
Oh.
Just because of the, you know, the way the names were. But
right.
So it was just the, like, you know, it was amazing actually that that there was, it became interest from Network eventually. So
wow,
yeah, and I think that they helped bring the music to a larger audience, and you know, and things really started to get going for us around that time.
Yeah.
But it, you know, initially it was conceived as a singer songwriter vehicle, and it was just a way to kind of like just sort of, you know, distance myself from the singer songwriter thing and let the project be whatever it, you know, however it shaped up to be. It wasn't necessarily a band on the first album. It was more just like me with an acoustic guitar and singing with a few friends, playing some other instruments. And the live show was kind of like that too. But over the years, we kind of pieced together a band, and then it became kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, this sort of revolving cast of people that came in and out of the band for various reasons. And one of the big reasons was because we toured a lot.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people when they have to make life decisions about like what they're doing, and it's hard to be away from home for that long, and that's totally understandable. But that was the big reason for a lot of people coming in and out of like the band in quotation marks, so to speak.
You view it as still this open-ended project on some level, like people can come and go.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people do.
People do. Because it's a hard life on some level.
Yeah.
Like not being in the Great Lakes Swimmers, being in a band and traveling. That's for other people to say, maybe. You said something there that I found fascinating about, you were kind of conscious of not being trapped by the singer-songwriter imprint. You also earlier said something about, you know, you're not the new band anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You've been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel hemmed in at all by being in the Great Lakes Swimmers, being the Great Lakes Swimmers? Like, do you feel like it's still something, or people have decided what it is, and even though it's always changing, like, are you conscious of that?
I really want to take, and with this new record too, it's kind of like, I feel like I'm just kind of starting to touch on it, but I really want to take it to interesting places from here. And really sort of like really think more deeply about like how to make it, you know, a more interesting, a creatively artistic project and not just like a folk rock band.
Sure.
I think I just sort of scratched the surface on this record, but it was enough to really get me excited about the project again.
Okay.
Because I was starting to get way down at, you know, and this is not now, but it was, you know, maybe a few years ago or 3 or 4 years ago about like, you know, okay, this is what five people can do in the room. And it's like guitar in every track, bass in every track, drums in every track. And it's just kind of like, it doesn't have to be that. It can be sort of whatever you imagine it to be as a musical project. It doesn't have to be a band playing, you know, in a room on a record. It can be different, you know, a series of collaborations, you know, or I can try to play something else other than acoustic guitar. I don't know. I don't feel hemmed in by it at all. And in some ways I'm glad that I'm glad to be an established act as well right now too, especially considering the climate of the industry and all of that stuff now too. I'm glad that we were able to establish ourselves sort of before all of these big changes that are happening in the industry right now.
How are you managing those changes yourself? Just by changing things up? Because you're kind of doing things the same way you've done them before. You're recording, you're making records.
Yeah.
You have a label that puts them out and then you tour like mad.
Yeah.
You haven't really altered your course in terms of, I mean, there are probably other ways you have that I'm not aware of, but is it more difficult? You're saying it's difficult on some level.
Yeah.
Things have changed. Like, what are you doing to kind of go with the time, so to speak?
I don't know. I don't like, like for me, that's not really my like area of expertise.
Sure.
You know, so it's not like, and I rely on the people that I work with to kind of like help me figure that out. But
you are, I think you have, going back to the punk ideology thing that we were talking about earlier, even the thing you were just saying about how this can be anything it wants to be.
Yeah.
You have this independent streak, and you have this conviction and trust in yourself. How open are you to strange marketing and promotion ideas? I mean, when people come to you and they say, I don't even know what they'd ask. Can you get on Snapchat? Can you do a thing? Are you like, I don't know what that is? Or like, because you're not a Luddite. You're on the Twitter and the Instagram and all that stuff.
Yeah, totally. I try to keep up with that a little bit. I've never liked Facebook as a platform. I know that's like probably ridiculous, but I've just stayed away from it.
These days, given the breaches and the manipulation, and maybe you knew.
I don't know. I felt really uneasy about it.
Yeah.
You know, when it first came out and I was like, there's something about this I really don't like, but you know, but I just kind of stayed away from it because I really just didn't like it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it is what it is. And I feel like at the same time I'm missing out on a lot of stuff.
You might be
people making connections through that platform, but at the same time I feel, you know, like we have a band page obviously, I don't have anything to do with
it.
But I do try to manage the, like Twitter seemed a little bit more reasonable to me to handle.
Also a bit of a dumpster fire now.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Totally. But and Instagram too. I've been trying a little bit, but it's really hard to keep up with that too.
That and seems like, to be elevating. I think more people are gravitating towards Instagram now.
Yeah. So I've been trying to keep up on that because I think the picture thing makes sense to me too. Like a picture and a little blurb, and it's kind of like that. That's sort of more manageable.
But are you occasionally asked
Even
to do something?
It's owned by Facebook now.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah. It has been for some time. Yeah, that's true. Are you occasionally asked to do like wacky things? Have you ever been asked to do something where you're like, nah, I can't, I don't think that makes sense for us?
Yeah, I guess there's been a few things where I'm trying to think specifically, but it's like,
just wonder if there might be something funny. Just something funny in the context of like Great Lakes Swimmers doing something kind of silly.
I know I have a story in my mind somewhere. I have to scroll through the through the file system. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
It'll come to me.
But you've probably turned it down if something occurs. Have you turned things down?
Yeah, definitely.
No, that's not for us.
Yeah.
We can't
for sure.
do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
There's a show that a guy has where he makes his guests just, I don't even know if it's still happening. He he just makes his guest eat like increasingly spicy chicken wings.
Uh-huh.
And I often...
This is part of the show.
The show is just it's a conversation, but throughout the course of 10, 15 minutes, Henry Rollins is just eating increasingly spicy. They're getting spicier and spicier until he has to sort of throw in the towel. And I try to picture people...
And that's when the interview ends.
I think so. Yeah. I haven't made it all the way through one of those videos. I don't know if they're still going on, but it's just this is the kind of stuff that people are getting asked to do now.
I see what you're saying, maybe. It's like kind of like this kind of sensational stuff, I guess.
It's kind of talking... Or, like, I have my... I don't know. I have my various complexes of about the show that I do, which is a relatively natural, relatively earnest, in-the-moment conversation show. But everyone else, and some people have shows like that, of course, but a lot of people are like, hey, you got a new record out. Can you tell us your favorite cooking book or cookbook or something? Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, that doesn't really have anything to do with the thing. They're just trying to find a way to, which is this weird acknowledgement that maybe, as you say, the music industry is changing. No one knows how to value music quite properly. They want to get involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
They want to ask Jeff Tweedy about his book, but they want him to just talk about something else other than his work.
And so
I wonder some, I mean, we, you know, we've talked about all sorts of things already, but I sometimes, like, I try to listen hard and ask about the things as best I can with the time I have, and the guests seem appreciative, but you must be in these positions sometimes where they're like, can you sit in a dunk tank?
Yeah.
And someone will just whip your CD at the thing, and then you get to fall, and then the winner gets a trip for two to Club Med or something. And you're like, well, what does this really have to do with my practice other than I'm sort of involved?
I've been pretty okay with, being okay with, like, walking away from a situation if called for.
Okay.
I have no problem with that. And I think one of the, and, you know, back to kind of like our record label too.
Yeah.
And I think that they, you know, have never sort of interjected creatively with anything. You know, I'm pretty proud of that fact that, like, we've been just making the music that we really want to make all of this time. And they've been supportive of that, you know, and they've been helpful in kind of helping us develop that on that side of things, but not in a creative way,
right.
You know? So it's like, I'm fully prepared to walk away from any sort of situation that impedes on that sort of full thing. So there's been no dunk tanks.
No.
There's been no,
My examples weren't great of such things, but yeah.
But I kind of see what you mean. I guess I'm pretty proud that we haven't had to do anything like that.
And, well, I just mean you invest so much. I know you, and I know you invest so much thought and energy into these records.
Yeah.
So then the promotion stuff starts, and that's where things can kind of go sideways, I think, because...
Yeah, maybe.
I frequently hear from people, and this is not to toot my own horn, but people will often say, well, thanks for actually reading the book.
Yeah.
Or listening to the thing. I'm like, well, what are other people doing? They're like, they don't. I'm like, oh, because, I mean, you talk about the music industry, and I know it's hard for people like me, music journalists, these days too. Like, we're, because the thing's crumbling, so the every aspect of it is, and that's all.
This is a good moment for me to interject, actually, that I absolutely love your show, and I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
And it should be compiled in kind of like We Owe You Nothing, the Punk Planet collected interviews kind of thing. It's totally, this is such a wonderful archive of music that I just can't say it. I'm very honored to be on this show right now.
Oh, geez, Tony. I'm such
a big fan. I thought this was a good time to interject that because I think you're doing such a great job and I love your show.
Well, thank you, Tony. Yeah. And I think you've expressed this to me in the past as well. And I didn't mean to go this route, but I just know you're a guy that thinks about things and you put it in your songs. And I just wonder when I ask about, you know, are you worried about being hemmed in, blah, blah, blah. I just wonder if you feel like sometimes the reception to your work is taken as... I don't know. I don't mean seriously, but just, like, you know, I mean, it's weird out here. Everyone's putting out stuff. And
it's really hard to know if it's getting through to people.
Yeah, resonating, know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that it is. I think that I feel the response has been pretty good for this record, you know, the newest record so far. I think it's getting through to people, but it's hard to know.
I appreciate that. And I mean, the record's sort of still young in its own way. And it takes a while to process such things, so...
I hope it is. I mean, I hope it's it. I hope it just it didn't. You know, I hope it wasn't done the week after it was released.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
You know, because it seems to be the way things are right now.
Yeah, get it up on something right away.
And, yeah,
yeah. This is going to be it's almost a cliche question. I don't want to let go of the fact that this milestone has been achieved, 15 years of Great Lakes Swimmers. And I know this is going to be a difficult question to answer, and I'm ramping it up right now so that I don't know why, just to make it more dramatic. But you are someone who started with a particular outlook on your field, maybe, what you were getting into, what you wanted to be known as. We're at a point now with this latest record where you've flipped the script a little bit. You've changed things up. I am curious if you can sort of summarize to the best of your ability what you've learned about yourself throughout the course of this band and making the music you make and the songs you've written and maybe just your approach to things. Have you, because you end up with a sense of self when you're creating things and expressing things on some level if you're self-aware. I just wonder, do you have that in a nutshell? Do you have a sense of where you were, where you are now and what that says about you and where this band has taken you as a person?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question.
It's a big one, and yeah. I that's why I ramped it up, because yeah. I don't expect a fully coherent thing. But I assume at some point when you're thinking about things, if you are, that this might occur to you. Like,
I think that at a certain point, yeah. Let me try to answer this.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But like, I think that at a certain point, I realized that like this is what I do. Like this is my that was kind of like an important thing to just know. It wasn't like, you know, this is some, like, you know, like at a certain point, it's like what I do is I really think about things and I feel like I have something to say. And I feel like I've been given this platform to say them. And I feel responsible, you know, for that. I feel responsible. And I think that it's important to you know, present that in the best way that I know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's musically and that's lyrically and all of that stuff. The sort of the larger role, you know, is sort of, maybe reflecting on things that people don't always have the time to reflect on,
yep.
You know, because we all have very busy lives, but someone has to take a step back and try to look at things and say, you know, this is how I see things. This is how things could be. Maybe this is how things were. Maybe this is how things are, and sort of reflect on some of the sort of the extremes of life, the beautiful things and the painful things, and sort of process them, and that's something that that people who do this sort of give to the rest of the us, you know, like we give that to each other, you know, as artists and as musicians and creative people and the arts in general, not just music, but it's a very important role, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that I've discovered the importance of as I've gone, you know, and come into kind of like a more deep consciousness about that over time. About not just my role, but my role in the larger scheme of things,
yeah.
Too, you know, amongst other people that are doing this kind of thing as well.
There's a song on this new album called The Real Work.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance anything you just said speaks to that song? With there's lines like, it's never done, you know, there's no result, there's no losing, there's no winning, it's just the work.
Yeah.
I don't know where that song came from, but I can't help it. It just, what you were saying made me think of it.
Yeah, part of that, like, that's like, that one, you know, that song, when I was finished with it, when I was finished writing with it, it still needed a few little tweaks here and there. But I just had a moment with that song where I was kind of like, all right, I think, you know, it's like I felt sad a little bit when it was done. I don't know. I just had this moment with that one. But I think, you know.
That's interesting because I think of it as a song about perseverance.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. But what I really, you know, part of what that song is about is that there's a lot of work that I think just goes unrecognized. And it's like that's the important stuff.
Yeah.
It's the work that gets recognized isn't always the most important work. It's all of the little things that we do, the care that people take with each other and sort of the reaching out, you know,
yeah.
That people do to each other that doesn't have, there's no platform for that. But that's the most important work, you know.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, I think it's a wonderful record, and I don't want to say it's potentially your best record, but I appreciate that you feel like this is a very different and very true expression of where you want to take this band.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want to shortchange anything you've done and make some blanket statement. Seven records in, I have my favorites. This one I'm still trying to penetrate on some level. There's just some stuff here that I'm still processing. But I, like I say, I know it means a lot to you and it means a lot to me, and I'm still trying to figure it out, which is,
yeah,
I think, a testament to a great record, frankly.
Yeah, well, me too. But, yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out too.
So what's sort of next for you at this point? I know you just got back from 6 weeks on the road. We're speaking ostensibly because you will be playing Guelph on the 22nd of November.
Yeah.
And more shows throughout the rest of the year?
Yeah, we're playing in Guelph, we're playing in Toronto, we're playing in London, we're playing in the church where we recorded the album in London,
okay.
Ontario.
Yeah.
And then we are going overseas after that for about 3 weeks, and we're doing a full European tour, a Europe-UK tour.
Okay.
Which, yeah, so that's kind of like the last part of this initial sort of, you know, touring component for the new album. We'll
sure.
be taking it overseas, and we'll be there basically up until Christmas.
And then probably summer stuff? If possible.
Yeah, I think next year we'll be doing stuff. Yeah.
2019. Like, yeah.
2019, yeah. Yeah. And we're already starting to talk about dates for the spring. There's a lot of places that we didn't get to also on this tour. So we're already talking about more tour dates in the spring as well. So I don't know. There's a lot of really good energy in this record, I think, and that's fueling me as well.
Yeah.
Like it's really allowing me. Like, I don't feel like, oh, we just did 6 weeks in the U.S. and I feel terrible and I want to collapse. It's like, I just don't feel that way. I feel good about it. I feel like we reached people, and I feel it's been the opposite of draining. It's been fulfilling in a lot of ways.
You alluded to the fact that you already have some kind of at least mental vision of where you'd want to go next in terms of songs or recordings. Is that, I mean, you're just touring right now, but do you have a plan? Do you have an idea of what you want to do?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the most important thing to me is kind of getting into the writing, though. That's the heavy lifting for me, is that, and then we can kind of figure out a sort of a scenario for like recording.
Okay.
That'll be fun and interesting, and I'm not quite there yet.
Okay.
But yeah, it's all sort of germinating now, and I'm pretty like, I don't know, like, I stoked is exactly the right word, but it's like not in the colloquial sense. It's like I do feel truly, like, you know, enlivened, if that's a word, right? Enlivened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Psyched? Do you feel psyched?
I feel psyched. I feel stoked.
Stoked. We got to go back to the 80s. Stoked is more now, I think. Psyched is more maybe the 80s. You're excited.
Yeah, totally. And it's been a really good flow so far with this group of songs. So I'm very much still on a very good plane, I think, to kind of to even go further out there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. So for more information about your band, where should people go?
Yeah.
We talked about the internet a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got a website, greatlakeswimmers.com. We are on Facebook, even though I have nothing to do with it. It's Great Lake Swimmers on Facebook. We have the Twitter. We have the Instagram.
Are there different? Is it Great Lake Swim on something?
On Twitter, it's Great Lake Swim.
Great Lake Swim.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Instagram, it's
great_lake_swimmers.
This is what I have to make people say on the show. They have to spell things out. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And we are on all the streaming platforms too, like Spotify and, you know, if that's how you get music, then I encourage you to check it out there as well.
But your records are available on vinyl. You put out a vinyl box set. How many years ago did that come out?
I think that was out in, I think it was 20, it was last year, I think.
Oh, last year. Okay.
Yeah. Paperbag Records reissued the first three albums on vinyl, which were out of print for quite some time. So
that's interesting. The Paperbag Records. Like,
yeah.
Were you on that label? I can't even remember.
No, we did. Interestingly, we did that. We did their children's compilation.
See You on the Moon.
Yeah, See You on the Moon was a Paperbag Records release, that compilation.
So, did they just get into vinyl reissues or something?
They started like a sort of a vintage imprint.
Oh, okay.
And again, I think that 10 years is potentially a bit dubious to call something vintage.
No, yeah, that's fair, yeah. But they came up with like a vinyl Because I think they did the Deers as well. Yeah, they did a couple other Deers. Box sets.
Yeah, they released an Art Bergman record too, which I was really happy to see.
Yeah, happen. Yeah.
But yeah, so they released records 1, 2, 3 in a box, and then a fourth disc of just material exclusive to the box, which was like demos and outtakes from that time period, from 2001 to 2007.
Cool. So that's out, and then the new record, and they're available on vinyl is my point, and people want them that way as well.
Yep.
Okay, is there a song from The Waves the Wake that you could choose for us to go out on right now? So it's always a big question.
Yeah, I would pick, since we talked about The Real Work, I would like to go out on that one.
Okay. We talked about it, so I feel like we've contextualized it. Or did we? I mean, I kind of gave you my reading of it. Do you want to say anything more about it?
No, I think I said what I needed to say about that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is the Real Work by Great Lakes Swimmers. Tony, you know, I really love that you came back on the show, and I appreciate your work and your... I just appreciate you. I thank you for doing this and being on this show, and best of luck with everything.
The feeling is mutual. Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Passes my eyes and stuns my senses. The outside world flows through these fences. They let out more than they take in. They bleed me out and I can't staunch them. My mouth lets out more than it takes in. It leads me out and I can't help it. It is nothing but a muscle flexed, a swirling sea of now and next. Upside down, inside out, this whole time going the wrong way. North was inverted, the directions, the plan got me turned around. I was on the right path, but couldn't feel the ground. Oh,
Very, very special thanks to Tony Decker of Great Lakes Swimmers for being on this, the 443rd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all iOS and Android platforms and also on things like Spotify and YouTube and Audio Boom as well. Interestingly, if you're listening to the show sequentially, the last guest was Sam Prekop of the Sea and Cake, now Tony Decker of the Great Lake Swimmers. A lot of water. It's just a lot of water. I guess we should all get used to it since the world is going to be full of... We're all going to be too bleak to talk about the climate change. Maybe I won't continue. Anyway, if you can't find an episode that you're looking for on any of those aforementioned platforms, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at vishcreative, or follow me at vishkana. Listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at cfru.ca or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast humming along. You can pledge whatever you like and cancel anytime. I shouldn't even mention the cancel. You know what? Canceling's not an option. You pledge, that's it. For life. In all seriousness, you can make monthly flexible pledges of whatever dollar amount you like. $5, $1 a month, $5 a month, $20 a month, whatever it is, it's up to you and you can change it whenever you like. But please do consider going to patreon.com/creativecontrol. If I can send you a Creative Control t-shirt in return for your generosity, just send me a note and I will do that. I will send it to you right away. Okay? Okay. Thanks again to the in-kind support I receive for this show from the likes of Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, Planet Bean Coffee, CFRU 93.3 FM, Granddad's Donuts, and that's pretty much it. Oh, my friend Jim Guthrie, he lets me use the instrumental version of his song, The Rest Is Yet to Come, to end the show each week, and that means a lot to me. Visit jimguthrie.org for more info about Jim. And finally, thank you. Thank you for listening to this show and subscribing to this podcast and telling your friends about the show and maybe suggesting they do the same, because it's a labor of love, and we should all share the love before the water levels rise and we're dead. All right, I gotta go. Talk to you hopefully soon. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.